Interested in learning about wine, but not sure where to start? You're in the right place. Welcome to the Cork and Fizz Guide to Wine podcast. I'm your host, Haley Bowman, and I'm so glad you're here. I'm a wine enthusiast turned wine educator and founder of the Seattle-based wine tasting business, Cork and Fizz. It is my goal to build your confidence in wine by making it approachable and lots of fun. You can expect to learn everything from how to describe your favorite wine to what to pair with dinner tonight and so much more. Whether you're a casual wine sipper or a total cork dork like myself, this podcast is for you. So grab yourself a glass and let's dive in. There are over 10,000 different styles of wine out there in the world. But it's easy to find ourselves drinking the same wines. I am so guilty of this, even as a wine like enthusiast myself. So you've got the most popular styles, right? Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Pinot Grigio, just to name a few. You find these the most often, and it's easy to gravitate towards these. But since you're listening to this podcast, I have a feeling it means you're interested in trying some new wines. So I thought it'd be fun to introduce you to four of my favorite wines that aren't quite as well known. Now, again, before we get into this, just a quick reminder, if you are not on my mailing list yet, what are you waiting for? I would love for you to join. When you do, you'll get a free shopping guide that has 15 of my favorite wines under $15. Head to corkandfizz.com, scroll down to the bottom, and there'll be a little section where you can join the mailing list. I send out a weekly newsletter filled with wine tips, recommendations, special offers, and so much more. All right, now let's get into the episode. So the first wine I'm going to introduce you to is Grüner Veltliner. This is one of the most reliable white wines that I've found at both a lower and higher price point. So I say that meaning if you're looking for something tasty at a low budget, try Grüner Veltliner. I found really great bottles as low as like $12. If you're looking to spend a bit more, though not a whole lot, maybe like $30-ish, be prepared to be amazed by the Grüner Veltliner that you can buy. This grape, Grüner Veltliner, is like a spicy Sauvignon Blanc. Like high acidity, light-bodied, low alcohol, your aromas include yellow apple, star fruit, peach, pear, asparagus, or even green beans. I know it's a little weird, but it just adds this like little green note to it. And then white pepper. And so if you're curious, like me, I don't know if I've ever smelled pure white pepper. So just a note on black pepper versus white pepper, all peppercorns are originally green in color. But black peppercorns are sun-dried, while white peppercorns have the outer layer removed either before or after drying, leaving the white seed. So most people will say white pepper smells more pungent than black pepper, and black pepper is slightly fresher and more complex. And that white pepper contains more of this chemical compound called rotundan. So if you ever heard me talk about rotundan, it might have been when I talk about aromatics. People say it's found in Syrah, and it's what gives Syrah that black pepper aroma. White pepper actually contains more, so there's a good chance that our Grüner Veltliner contains more rotundan than a lot of Syrah. And finally, our last aromatic is flint. So again, think wet rock, minerality, walking by a waterfall, the smell of the pavement after it's just rained. That is that aroma I'm talking about. Grüner Veltliner, it originates from Austria, and that's still where you're going to find most of it today. Most of it is made in the region of Austria called Lower Austria. This region is broken down into 8 separate wine districts that form a loop around Vienna. But interestingly enough, doesn't include it. Vienna is technically its own wine region. It's the only major city in the world to be considered its own wine region. Here, you are going to find 3 climate zones. So here being Lower Austria. So you're going to have the Weinviertel in the north. And I'm sorry, I don't know Austrian. So these are going to be, I might not be perfect on the pronunciation. So Weinviertel is on the same latitude as the Champagne region, so it always makes lighter, easy drinking styles with a lot of freshness. It's a cooler area. Then the Danube River region with its side valleys, so this is west of Vienna. This includes Triesen, Kamp, and Krems. This is home to Austria's most famous vineyards, and this is where age-worthy single-vineyard Grüner Veltliners are grown. You're going to have a rocky soil. You've got nice quartz, gravel, loess, and sand that dominate those soils. And then finally, the Pannonian region, the Niederösterreich, to the southeast. It is a mouthful. but these are equally long-lived wines, but they're on lighter feet. So it's got more calcareous soil versus that rocky soil. So again, the Niederösterreich, I would spell it, but it's real long. So just look for a long word that starts with an N and ends with Österreich. All right, so those are your three regions in Lower Austria. Grüner Veltliner is also grown a decent amount in Slovakia, Hungary, and the Czech Republic, though I'm guessing these wines really don't make it out of the country very much. Other than Austria, the other country that I've had Grüner Veltliner from is actually the U.S. I've had two really delicious bottles from Santa Barbara, one by a winery called Totomer, and one by a winery that you just met a couple episodes ago, Kamins to Dreams. I've also seen a few bottles from Oregon, Washington, and New York, though it's not super common. Grüner Veltliner is incredibly super food friendly. Think of it like a palate cleanser. So with that in mind, you can pair it with creamier, more rich dishes. I'd lean towards white sauce over red sauce, though. The tomato could overpower it or just kind of like just not work together. And then lighter meats over red meats for that same reason. And then due to the spice in Grüner Veltliner, it can also pair well with spiced dishes like tarragon chicken or chicken piccata. I recommend serving this wine cold, but not ice cold. So place it in your fridge for at least, 12 hours. Then take the bottle out 20 minutes or so before you plan to drink it. Now, some Grüner Veltliner, remember I said they were age-worthy, can age up to 10 to 15 years, but not all of them. If you're purchasing from a small wine shop or directly from a winemaker, be sure to ask them their opinion on how long that bottle should age or when you should drink it. Okay, wine number two. I gave a little preview of this in last week's episode. So wine number two is Mencia. And this Spanish red wine absolutely blew my mind the first time I tried it. My first thought was, why did I wait so long to have this wine? Mencia is a beautiful, deep ruby-colored wine. That darker color tells us that Mencia has high anthocyanin, which often leads to more structured tannins in the wine. It's also what people will say is like, those are like the healthy things in wine, right? Like the antioxidants. And I mean, kind of, but it's also still wine with alcohol. So I'm never going to say it's healthy, but it's good for the soul. In terms of aromas, Mencia contains high levels of a subgroup of aroma compounds called terpenoids. These translate into these really lovely floral aromas, some strawberry, raspberry, black licorice, pomegranate, and cherry sauce. So those terpenoids, just think like floral and fruity. You can also find aromas of crushed gravel and blackberry in a Mencia. Structure-wise, you can expect medium plus across the board. So when I say medium plus, like think on like a scale 1 to 5, a medium plus is like 4 out of 5. So 4 out of 5 acidity, 4 out of 5 tannin, 4 out of 5 alcohol, and 4 out of 5 or medium plus body. So this has got a lot going on. Now, if you've never heard of Mencia, unless except for on my podcast, not surprising. It's really only grown in Spain and Portugal on that Iberian Peninsula. Mencia grapes are grown in primarily 4 regions on the Iberian Peninsula. So you have Ribera Sacra, Valdeoras, Bierzo, which remember Bierzo was on our last episode last week. Those 3 are all in northwestern Spain. And then it is grown a little bit in the Douro, and this is in northern Portugal. In my opinion, the best Mencia comes from Bierzo, but I could easily be convinced if I had some more wines. It's just a really lovely grape. Bierzo wasn't actually a DO status until 1989. We talked about this a little bit last week. Mencia was originally known as simple regional grape variety, grown in volume, used to make table wines, nothing exciting. However, at the turn of the 20th century, it experienced a surge in popularity. This is thanks to that high-profile winemaker, Alvaro Palacios, of Priorat fame. So he was first there. Then he went to Bierzo. He and his nephew ended up creating some of the best wine in the region at their winery, Descendientes de José Palacios. Winemakers quickly learned that when done right, they followed the lead of Alvaro Palacios. Mencia could offer this really fascinating wine across a contrasting spectrum of styles. So at one end, you had fruity, like fruit-forward wines with supple tannins and succulent fruit. At the other end, you had more concentrated, powerful styles with this more like exotic earthiness, smooth tannins, and just that enviable reflection of like minerality that you would find in the Bierzo terroir. Cost-wise, I'd say you could find a great Mencia for about $15 to $30. I would enjoy this at cellar temperature. So either enjoy it straight from your cool temp cellar, so 55 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, or place it in the fridge for about 30 minutes before you're drinking it if it's just at like room temperature. Some Mencia can age up to 20 years. Others are more fruit forward and meant to be drank now. So similar to the advice I gave for the Gruner, just ask when you buy it. This podcast is sponsored by Repour Wine Savers. Listen, I love wine, but that doesn't mean I want to drink a full bottle every night. You see, it's always a risk opening a bottle knowing I'll only have a glass or two. But now I don't worry about that at all because I have Repour. These little contraptions will keep your open bottles of wine good for up to 3 months by removing oxygen from the bottle using fancy chemistry. And they're so easy to use. I simply open a bottle of wine, cork or screw cap, just like normal, and enjoy my glass or two. Then, when I'm ready to call it a night, I rip the foil off my Repour wine saver and place it in the bottle in place of the cork or screw cap, and then stick the bottle in the fridge. Simple as that. Then, whenever I grab another glass from that bottle in the future, I just make sure to put the Repour back on as soon as I'm done pouring. It's that easy. Want to give Repour a try? Head to repour.com, repour.com, and use code CORK and FIZZ for 10% off your order. That's Repour, repour.com, and use code CORK and FIZZ. No spaces in that, and the and is spelt out. So it's CORKANDFICZ. Once you have Repour, you'll never have to worry about opening a bottle of wine just for one glass. I mean, heck, now you can try two or more wines at the same time and have your own at-home wine tasting. This podcast is sponsored by the Cork Crew Virtual Wine Club. Interested in trying new wines, but not sure where to start? Or maybe you've been listening to this podcast for a while and you love the idea of tasting wine live with me. If that's you, come join my Cork Crew Virtual Wine Club and you'll get to sip wine with me twice a month while I help you find new favorite wines. The Cork Crew is not your ordinary wine club. This is a community of people who are passionate about exploring new flavors, learning about different wine styles, and having fun along the way. And the best part about this club? Purchasing the wine is completely optional. Plus, all events are recorded, and you have access to the full library of recordings as a Cork Crew member, so you can always catch up if you can't make it live. Oh, and did I mention it's virtual, which means you get to do all of this from the comfort of your sofa in your PJs. No need to worry about driving in crappy traffic, finding a designated driver, or spending an arm and a leg on a taxi. Want to give it a try without the commitment? You're in luck. Right now, I'm offering a free class pass to anybody who wants to try out the Cork Crew Virtual Wine Tasting Club. With this pass, you'll be able to join a Cork Crew event of your choosing. No strings attached. I don't need your credit card. I don't need you to sign up for anything. You'll be my guest. Simply head to corkandfizz.com/free-class-pass to get your class pass and be one step closer to becoming a member of the best wine tasting club around, the Cork Crew. I can't wait to see you there. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, wine number three, Suave. This is also, the wine is called Suave. The grape is called Garganaga. If Gruner Veltliner is my go-to bottle when grabbing a bottle at the store, Suave is my go-to bottle when ordering a bottle of wine at dinner for a group, especially if we're at an Italian restaurant. So unlike the other ones I've mentioned here, Suave is the name of the region in Northwest Italy where the wine is made, not the name of the grape. The grape that Suave is primarily made out of is Garganaga. Flavor-wise, you can expect notes of peach, honeydew melon, tangerine, fresh herbs, almonds, and salinity. Think like seashells and ocean breeze. Structure-wise, you got medium to high acidity, so very refreshing, light-bodied, and low alcohol. So we're very similar structure-wise to that Gruner Veltliner, just different flavors going on. Now, while most sources will recommend that you pair this wine with lighter meats like chicken, turkey, fish, and lighter dressings like citrus or herbaceous sauces, I found that this wine can pair just as well with a Caesar salad as it does with gnocchi and red sauce. So, and this is purely from experience. Anytime I order this for our table at an Italian restaurant, we've got multiple people there all doing a different dish, the Suave always pairs with everything. It tastes great no matter what you're eating it with. This wine should be served cold, but again, not ice cold. Take it out of the fridge about 30 minutes before you plan to drink it. I mean, unless, of course, it's the middle of the summer and you need something ice cold and refreshing, this actually works really well for that too. So, I mean, it depends on what you want to get out of it. More aromas? Get a little warmer. Just want it ice cold and refreshing? Take it right out of the fridge. Price-wise, you shouldn't need to spend more than $20 at a bottle shop, and you will likely be able to find one for around $50 on a restaurant wine list. And while you can drink them young, some, namely those labeled Suave Superiore or Suave Classico, can age for 3 to 7 years and develop more aromas and flavors. And finally, wine number 4, Carmenere. I have a soft spot for Chilean wines because they were the topic of my very first virtual wine tasting. And the wine that stands out the most to me is Carmenere. It's the perfect wine to pair with grilled or roasted meats or even grilled bell peppers. That's my favorite pairing. This wine just has so much flavor and aroma. It ranges from medium to full-bodied and has lower acidity and tannin levels. Aroma-wise, you'll find things like raspberry, black plum, paprika, vanilla, and green bell pepper. That green bell pepper aroma comes from a specific aroma compound called methoxypyrazine, often called pyrazines for short. This aroma compound occurs naturally in the vines, developed as a way for the plant to protect itself from pests. If this sounds familiar, it's because we talked about it with our Cabernet Franc episode as well, that also had pyrazines and green bell pepper aromas. Too much pyrazine can be overwhelming. Think like old asparagus water or like mushy steamed green peppers. But as long as the growers are smart in the vineyard, aka they're clearing the fruit zone of leaves so that the grapes get more sunlight, they're keeping the canopy in good order, the canopy again is all those leaves up top, and they're restricting the amount of water that the vines receive early on, those pyrazine levels should just add complexity and not be overwhelming. As I mentioned before, most Carmenere in the world comes from Chile, but it's actually a funny story on how that happened. You see, Carmenere originated in France, in Bordeaux specifically, and it was thought to be nearly extinct when most of the plantings were pulled up and replaced with vines that grafted better to American rootstock after phylloxera. That, remember that tiny little aphid bug that destroyed all the vineyards? Yeah, when they realized how to fix it, they had to graft their vines onto American rootstock. Carmenere didn't graft very well, so they're like, get rid of that, we don't need it. Lucky for us, though, Carmenere was brought down to Chile by French winemakers escaping phylloxera. However, this is the part where you're like, okay, so why did we think it was extinct then? You see, they didn't realize it at the time. They thought they were bringing down Merlot. If you look at the leaves of the grapes closely, you can only spot a couple differences. They're super similar. So similar that it wasn't until 1994, it's a year before I was born, and nearly 145 years after it was brought over to Chile, that a French ampelographer, fancy name for a botanist for grapes, Jean Mitchell, not even going to try to pronounce that last name, identified Carmenere vines. So again, the French winemakers went down to Chile to make wine after phylloxera, thought they were bringing Merlot, turns out it's Carmenere. Before they finally realized it was Carmenere, Chilean winemakers did notice a couple differences between the actual Merlot and this Carmenere that they were calling Merlot. One of the major differences was that it ripened much later. So they started calling it the other Merlot or Chilean Merlot. And I mean, who knows? It could have been. Last week, we were talking about, you know, clones between Rioja and Ribera del Duero, right? And, you know, a same variety can end up being slightly different based on where it's grown. So it's not crazy that that could happen. However, it was not just the other Merlot. Turns out it was Carmenere. So this mistake saved the variety from extinction because 96% of Carmenere vines are grown in Chile. So Carmenere is grown primarily in the Valle Central of Chile, but in lots of different pockets, including the Maipo, Male, and Cachapoal valleys. I think its finest sites are located in the Colchagua Valley in Valle Central. There's an area that is newly dubbed Apalta and Los Lingues Dios, and these are known, honestly, these are the ones to know for Carmenere. So Apalta, A-P-A-L-T-A, and then Los Lingues, L-O-S, and then L-I-N-G-U-E-S. They achieve this really nice coveted balance between power and finesse. They've got sloped hillsides, valleys, and then flatter lower ones as well. So you get a little bit of everything with that Carmenere. Cost-wise, you can get a great bottle between $15 to $30. I would serve this wine just below room temperature, so maybe put it in the fridge for like 20 minutes before you drink it. And most Carmenere is meant to be drank somewhat young, about 5 to 10 years of age. If you have it a little earlier than that, I don't think you'll have any problem with it. Maybe just decant it, throw it in that decanter for like half an hour. All right, there you have it. There are 4 new wines for you to go out and try. So first we talked about Grüner Veltliner, which you're most likely going to find from Austria. Then we talked about Mencia, a red grape from Bierzo in Spain. Then Suave, our lovely, fun Italian white wine that's going to pair well with so many different foods. And finally, Carmenere, which is our Chilean red that has that fun green bell pepper note, but lots of other raspberry, black plum, really rich flavors. It's going to go really well with grilled meats. Let me know which one you are most excited to try. Send me a message on Instagram at corkandfizz or send me an email, haley@corkandfizz.com. Now, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you loved it as much as I did, I would so appreciate it. Take a quick second, leave a review, rate it, and share it with a friend. If you know somebody who needs to try some new wines, they're kind of stuck in a rut, it'd be a great way to say, hey, why don't we go try one of these wines? Just send them a picture of the podcast or send them a link. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. We release new episodes every Wednesday. In next week's episode, I'll be interviewing David Kong, the founder of Glassvin. Glassvin is a young and vibrant company that is changing the glassware industry. They're offering hand-blown glassware at a more accessible price by cutting out the middlemen between the artist and you. I think you'll find David's take on glassware super interesting. I find that glass, like wine glasses, it can be a very, snobby topic. But I think his take on it is super interesting, and it might encourage you to potentially go out and get that one fancy glass for you to use basically all the time. You'll see what he says. Thanks again for listening. As a thank you, I'd love to share my free shopping guide, 15 Wines Under $15. Simply head to my website, corkandfizz.com, scroll down to the bottom, and join the mailing list. Cheers!